tell you. By the way, Eric, if you want, I don't mind if you fiddle while I'm doing. Won't distract me. I hope it won't distract me. I tell you, it's like, I don't know. It's so struggling.
It's Japanese, I can smash it. It's not plug-and-play.
Okay, we're holding on Perek Chavtes of the Tiferes Yisrael. We went through much of through the first significant part of it last time, and today we're going to go. We'll try to deal with the balance of it. Specifically, from the portion where it says, "B'shah shikdimu nasa l'nishma." When the Jewish people said Nasa before Nishma, so 600,000 Malachi Hashoris came and came, and they tied two crowns right on the head of each of the Jewish people. Shishim Ribay Malachi Hashoris came and tied two crowns, one for Nasa, one for Nishma. That's the way the Gemara says it. The Maral explains what this idea is. What's the idea of the two crowns that the Bnei Yisrael were given as a result of Nasa v'Nishma? So explains Maral, and he talks in this way in many places in his Svarim. He says that b'chol adam yesh shnei dvarim. In every person there are two things. Many times he says there are three things. Right, but for the purposes of this discussion, it's understandable that there are two things. There's koyach havayas hanefesh, koyach havayas hanefesh, shupoel hamase. One is the power of the life of the person, of the soul of the person, that it brings things to action. Shupoel hamase. When you do something, right? So where there's a will, right? Where there's a drive, where you think I'm moving my hand from here, and I'm doing this, I'm moving my glasses, right? That's the koyach havayas hanefesh. That's the force, the life force within the person that decides to do something. V'asheni hu haseichel. The second is the seichel, the mind, the intellect. Right? This, of course, you will say, is to some degree driven by my mind, by my brain, right? My brain gives the instruction to my hand to go and wave around, this thing like that. But you understand that the seichel, as something of a independent, objective way of thinking, is a koyach for itself. A person has sort of like base drives and pushes that move us forward, and then there's the seichel. So the Maral says as follows: Kasher haseichel hu mutpa beguf ein echad ben chayrin klal. When the seichel, when the intellect, is very much grounded in the guf, in the body, and in the bodily directions and urges and desires, a person is not to be seen as free at all, on any level. Im ha-nefesh, the soul isn't free, v'mpnei kimayish alav ha-seichel, u'menahigay kifidatei v'sichlei. Hareyene ben chayren. Right, a person's bodily movements are always going to be, to some degree, directed by the mind. And therefore, since the mind in itself is, so therefore the nefesh is not in that sense free. And on the other hand, the seichel isn't free either, because it's mutba beguf, because it's rooted in the physicality. Vein zeh ben chayrin, in that sense it's not free. V'kasher higdimu nasa l'nishma, harei amru nasa miyad b'li hanhaga seichel miyaseh. But remember, what's part of nasa v'nishma? Nasa v'nishma is without thinking. Without seichel, without decision making, without, to some degree, as we talked about last time, 2 weeks ago, without even exercising the power of bechira, of real choice. Right? They just gave themselves over. They said, we were made to do this, so we do this. So they've given themselves over on that level. That's the nasa. And likewise, the seichel also continues to exist, and it's not mutba bechamri, it's not entrenched in physicality, and therefore the seichel itself has transcended to some degree the chaimer, the physicality, and it is also free. L'fikach shneim heim melachim Shein Tzorech Zeh Lazeh. Therefore, they are both kings. The Maral here, again, so this is the way he's formulating this idea. The Keser, the crown that we speak about, the crown of Nasa V'Nishma, right, the crowns that are brought down, a crown represents Malchus, represents the king. The king who's not beholden to something else, not imprisoned, limited by something else. The ironic way that the Maral is viewing this is that usually the desire, the moves of a person are going to be defined by their seichel, and their seichel in turn is heavily influenced by their chaimer, by their physicality. When we said Nasa V'Nishma, what we did was, to some degree, again, it was a mindless Kabbalah. It was a Kabbalah that said, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, you made us to do these things. We are giving ourselves over to you completely. Again, surrendering our Bechira, our free choice, to some degree. And therefore, it's no longer that that what we do is going to be limited by our Seichel. So what we do has a strength, an independence, and a life of its own. Now that life of its own, of course, is defined in turn by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to whom we surrendered the Bechira. That's not going to be a suspension of our chayrus, of our freedom. Again, when we take that as a given, that's of course something which has to be put into the mix. That's not a suspension of chayrus. Ein ben chayrin elami shayisik v'tayra. And on the flip side, on the other side, the seichel, nishma, which has its role subsequent, to be able to really understand, and the seichel is no longer imprisoned, limited by chaymer. The understanding is now a pure understanding, the understanding of Malachi Ashares, the understanding that becomes an instinctive and natural and comfortable understanding of Torah instead of the very limited physical understanding that requires us to wade through, you know, all the difficulty and confusion that can stand in the way of being able to see things in Hashem's way. But when we are free of the shackles of chaimer, of physicality, we're able to see these things that much freer, clearer. So then that's the Nasa V'Nishma. That's the crown of Nasa V'Nishma. Let me try to explain this a little bit. Not the simplest, but on the other hand, not so difficult. Just the terminology, the way he structures it, we have to understand. I'll try to explain it by sharing with you something which actually the Meshech Chachma says happens to be in yesterday's parsha. It's a beautiful Meshech Chachma. I'm sure I've shared with some of you before. But in yesterday's parsha, we had the idea of the Parshas HaNazir. The Nazir who separates from certain pleasures of this world. And we call the Nazir, you know, both a Chayte and a Kadosh. The aspect of Kedusha, the aspect of sanctity of the Nazir, the aspect of strength of the Nazir is, as the Gemara describes the story of the classic perfect Nazir, which was, you know, what Shimon HaTzadik says, there was a Nazir he saw, came in Hadarim, that he had beautiful, beautiful flowing hair, and he asked him, why did you come here? Why are you coming here to chop all your hair off? And he explained to him that he was a shepherd. Raya ha'isi la'abu bi'iri, he was a shepherd for his father in his town, and he once went to the well, right? They didn't have mirrors on top of every sink, but the sink was the mirror, right? They went to the fountain, and they saw, he looked down into the water as he was filling up whatever the trough for his sheep, drying water for his sheep, and he saw his reflection. He says, and I was overwhelmed. I was quite taken by myself, and I was like ready to just act in my self-absorption. And I said, you know something, I got to get a hold of myself. And so I said, I'm committed, I'm going to cut off my hair for the sake of Hashem. And really, of course, this is the way, you know, classically it's understood, that the Nazir, while we don't necessarily preach asceticism as a general way of life for a person, but we do preach it as a way of a person being able to gain control. When materialism becomes the driver for the person, or a significant driver for the person, then it's big trouble. Right? All those, like when the Matzilas Yesharim wrote about Prishus, which he was a big advocate for, it was not because a person ideally should be completely separate from the world, but because to the extent that the person dabbles in the stuff, it becomes a driver for the person. And we're not supposed to be driven by physicality. We're physical beings who are supposed to exist and not be suffering in the physical world. We're not supposed to be driven by physicality. We're supposed to be driven by higher goals. So this fellow who found himself where the wheel really was ripped from his hands and taken over by the physicality, so he came to do a corrective, to pledge Nazirus for a period of time. So the Pasuk says, in the day that he completes his Nazirus, Yavi Yisrael Pesach El Mayit. He brings him to the door of the El Mayit. And Rashi says, what does it mean, Yavi Yisrael? He brings him. He comes. So Rashi says a couple of times, a few times we find in the Torah that he uses this kind of term, but Yavi Yisrael means that he brings himself. He brings himself to the door of the El Mayit. The Meshech Chachma says, so why does it express itself in this way? And he says that the idea is because, generally speaking, you don't bring yourself someplace. You're sort of just like you're driven. There's an autopilot. That's part of this idea that the chaimer, that the physicality of the person just has a life of its own that moves the person, that drives the person, that makes the person's decisions for them. This Nazir has reached a stage of Yavi Oisai where he's able to somehow to be so much achieving self-control that when it comes to his body, it's like he's bringing himself, like almost an objectivity from the outside, that he's bringing himself to the door of the Ohel Moed. That's what the Nazir has achieved. In the Musar Chabura that we do, so I recently was sharing with the people what Rav Volo brings from Rabbi Yerucham's Pinkas HaKabbalah, is his personal journal of Avoida, the things which he accepted upon himself. And what Rabbi Yerucham wrote was that he finds himself, that he's altogether not in control of himself. There's something else that's just driving him and moving him. And that's the chaimer, that's his physicality. It just makes his decisions for him. And so his Avoida, what he wanted to do was to make himself have mind over matter, to let his seichel control his chaimer, to let his mind control his physicality. And the way he undertook it, the way he set about to start doing that goal, is that at least five times a day he would make sure to make a decision to do something or to not do something over what his chaimer was pulling him to do. Just to exercise, to strengthen his das, to strengthen his mind over his physicality. But this is the kind of thing, this is the way it is. You know, it works that way with material desires, it works that way with midos. And when does a person ever find themselves getting angry, and then afterwards say to themselves, yeah, that was good. It was a good decision I made just there to get angry. Right? It's right. Never. You know, all the nice rationale which we'll be able to say about, you know, it's good that people should, people have to realize they did something wrong, it's important. But, you know, after all is said and done, we know that we get angry, something else is driving the ship. You know, we lose our control of ourselves to some degree. So it's never good. Something else is moving. Something else is driving. The idea of the ksarim, of the crowns which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to us, was because whether it is the natural drives of the person, or the seichel of the intellect of the person, it's all wrapped up in these other drivers. Obviously, the drives of the person that are going to be driven are going to be affected by chaimer, but even the way the Maharal expresses it, they're affected by a seichel. The physicality is driven by a seichel, which in turn is wrapped up in the chaimer. And when the person gives themselves over so that even without seichel, there's a natural instinct letov, a natural instinct to do the right things. And then when their seichel explores things, their seichel is able to explore them with purity and with clarity, so then these two drivers are restored to being truly free of just being there as shackled from you know, the material control to be on their own. And those are the ksarim. Those are the crowns. The crowns that the Malachi Hashareis came and tied to them, because what the Jewish people said themselves was angelic, was transcending physicality, was prepare yourself, separate yourselves from the world for 3 days so you could accept the Torah and you'd be able to encounter Hashem, be somehow away from this. That's the chayrus. That's the freedom. That's the ben chayrin that ends up with the crown. That's the ben chayrin which ends up with the crown. Those are the crowns that we speak about over here. And when the Jewish people sinned at the Masa HaEgel, so it says, what happened? So Hashem sent down 1.2 million angels to come and to retrieve the crowns. Right? They came to take the crowns back. Because what were the Bnei Yisrael doing when they sinned at the Masa HaEgel? There they were turning around and surrendering to the physicality again. Whether it was because of the fact that look what they were doing. They were worshipping, as the Pasuk says, Asher Echalesev, an ox that munches on grass. Right? This is the all the differences between the people and the animals were being obliterated. As instead of people at least even celebrating their own humanity, instead they deferred to the Bahami, to the physical, to the material selves. That was the ultimate surrender. Whether it was in the fact that the eagle came from the fact that the Jewish people said, we're not going to be able to maintain an engagement with Hashem Yisbarach, with Hashem, right? We need Moshe Rabbeinu to do it. And then when Moshe Rabbeinu's gone, we have nothing. We have no connection. The Bnei Yisrael, in that sense, were surrendering to the Chumri, to the physicality, which is giving up their freedom, their crowns. They remain now again, or they return now again, to be imprisoned by the chumrius, to be imprisoned by the physicality, and therefore no longer to wear the crowns of someone who is pure, objective, in control. Okay, are you guys, you get it? Is it okay? It's good? Okay. Okay, I would just mention as a nispach, as an additional thing, we're going to go on now to talk about Moshe Rabbeinu. Right, so the next piece, the Gemara says there in the Agadat on Shabbos, is that when those 1.2 million crowns were taken away, so Kulan, not La Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu got them all. Moshe Rabbeinu got them all. So we'll talk about a little bit about what that means, that Moshe Rabbeinu got them all. But before we get to what the Maharal is going to say about that, it's written in Svarim. Happened to talk about it this year in one of the Parsha Shiurim. I think it was Vayakil. We have Shmir Shabbos at the beginning of Melechas HaMishkan after the Egel. So in Svarim it says that Moshe Rabbeinu got them all, but he gives them back to the Jewish people on Shabbos. Yismach Moshe b'matnas chelko yikeven neman karasalei. What we say on Shabbos morning, which is about the Shabbos of Matan Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu rejoices with his gift. Klil tiferes b'roshay nosati. He gave him the ultimate crown on his head when he stood on Har Sinai. V'shnei luchay slavonim v'chos v'mshmirah Shabbos. And it was written on it, Shmirah Shabbos. So Moshe Rabbeinu turned around and gave Shabbos to the Jewish people after the Masa HaEgel. So he was giving them something of the crowns of Nasa v'Nishma, which were all given to him. And the idea of it, you know, very simply is that to some degree we understand that during the work week, the person is indeed experiencing this thing of being imprisoned by the physicality, right? Your work, right? When we speak about a worker is an Oved, right? He's Oved Adama. He's subject to all the demands and the bonds of work. On Shabbos, the person achieves some level of liberation, of freedom from that. And so to some degree, those crowns of being independent of Chaimer, of being independent of physicality on some level, is what we're supposed to regain on Shabbos. Even if we don't have it regularly, even if we don't have it even on Shabbos to the degree, of course, that the Jewish people had it at Har Sinai, but that's restorative to some degree of that level, of what that was supposed to create amongst the Bnei Yisrael, create amongst our people. Even the Mesilas Yesharim, who we alluded to before, who counsels Prishus, separation from the physical world, generally, the one thing which he says, as the exception is Chutz, with the exception of the days when Einig is a mitzvah, referring to Shabbos. On Shabbos, engage in the physical world, because somehow the idea is that on Shabbos, a person is supposed to be able to engage in it without being imprisoned by it. Shabbos is supposed to be the day where the spirituality gives him control. Now, it may not feel like that when you're going for your third helping of Kugel, right? And I don't really know. Whenever we talk about these things about Shabbos and the material and sanctifying the material, you know, I think there's a certain realism that we have to understand as well, that, you know, it's idealist to approach it that way, but it doesn't necessarily always come across that way in our lives. I can only speak personally. So the concept, the idea, to whatever degree the person is able to achieve it, or to even just understand it and identify it as a goal, but that's really the kayach, that's the power of Shabbos. The power of Shabbos is that here somehow all of the imprisonment to the physical world, which is part of the condition of the world as we know it, post-chet, post-original sin and post-egel sin, of, you know, b'zeyas apecha teichal lechem, right? You're going to go and you're going to work the earth, ad shufchel adama, rekimimenu lukach, to the sort of fact that the person is a slave to the earth, that he's going to end up, you know, being under it, and so on and so forth. And during his lifetime, he's working to cultivate. And all that stops on Shabbos. All that stops on Shabbos. It's a throwback to the Yom Shekulei Shabbos, to Gan Eden, to that freedom. And that freedom carries with it the crowns of not being a prisoner of physicality, which are the ksarim, which are the crowns, the way the Maharal sees it, of Nasa v'Nishma. To have it and be in control of it. Yeah. Okay. So what happens next? What happens next is Natla Moshe. When the Jewish people lose it at the Egel, Moshe Rabbeinu takes it. So what's the idea there? So we say, look, Moshe Zaymed Neger Kol Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu is the equal of the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu is the equal of the Jewish people. He was the tzura of the Jewish people. He gave form and direction to the Jewish people as a whole. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu takes it all. So let's try to look and understand what this is, what this means, really in the Parsha of Matan Torah itself. Doesn't require great mystical things in order to be able to see what's being spoken about here when we say Kula Natal Moshe, that it was all taken by Moshe Rabbeinu. After the Jewish people stood at Har Sinai and heard directly from Hashem, the Dibrais, whatever, all of them, two of them, so they turned to Moshe Rabbeinu and they said, we can't do this. Kravato Ushmu Askal Hashem Hashem Alekeinu. You go and you hear it. And then you'll tell us what it is. We discussed already in the past, a couple of weeks ago, I think, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, that Moshe Rabbeinu, that the Jewish people in that time actually reversed Nasa v'Nishma. It says, you will speak to us what Hashem says to you, v'shamanu v'asinu, and we will hear and we will do, which is Nishma v'Nasa. It's the exact opposite of Nasa v'Nishma. They were taking the step back. They couldn't have that direct contact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they originally asked for and that they originally experienced at Har Sinai. As they expressed it, Ki mi kol basar, which being of flesh can hear the word of Hashem and be able to survive? We talked once about the Sneh, I think, right? We talked about the burning bush and how the Sneh was the metaphor for Mamad Har Sinai. Right there, that the fire could be meeting up with the thorn bush, and the thorn bush doesn't get consumed. That was the original way that Hashem appeared to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har HaElokim, at Har Sinai. And it was a signal of Tadnus HaElokim al HaRazeh, because the idea was there the physical and the spiritual will meet, and usually that's a contradiction, but Mamad Har Sinai would show us the possibility of it not being a contradiction. of a physical being being able to meet the spiritual, but not as a regular physical being, right? He's going to have to be different, as the Jewish people were different when they stood at Matan Torah, and as Moshe Rabbeinu was different forever afterwards. But the Jewish people couldn't sustain that difference. They had to step back from it. And they therefore said, we're stepping back for it, but Moshe Rabbeinu, you stay in it. You're going to maintain yourself as a Malach Hashem. And Hashem agreed. Hashem said to Moshe, go tell them, Shuvu lachem le'aleichem, they should go back to their tents. But you stay here with me. Now Moshe Rabbeinu then got an exclusive. He got an exclusive. He was going to be the one. But Moshe Rabbeinu hated this exclusive. Excuse me for saying it in such strong terms. I shouldn't say he hated it. He resisted it. He didn't want it. You read the Rashi's, right? Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't so happy with it. What are you doing? Don't you want to have the direct connection to Hashem? Why do you want to have it second hand? Hashem said, Heitivu asher diberu. They said, good. Right? It's good that they have fear of Hashem. It's good that they realize the difficulty it is to approach Him and to have this closeness with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Hashem approved of our hesitation, given the reality of who we were. Moshe Rabbeinu was not happy with it. If you want to look for another example of Moshe Rabbeinu and how he wasn't happy with it, there are many along the way, but you look at this week's Parsha, Parshas Baha'alo Yischa, which is a very important part of that story, where Moshe Rabbeinu is trying very much to separate, to restore that everybody should be able to have it. Remember, Eldad Umedad were prophesizing in the Machaneh, and everybody was getting nervous. Yeshua says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Kiloim, kill them or lock them up. And what's Moshe Rabbeinu's response? Mi'itein kol am Hashem neviim, ki yitein Hashem esrucho aleihem. I would love if everybody would be a Navi, that Hashem would put His Spirit on everybody. I don't mind. I don't view them as renegade prophets that somehow they're breaking my monopoly. I'm very happy. I want all of the Jewish people to be Nevi'im, to be directly Nevi'im. And what he does in this week's parsha of saying, you know, Hashem, have other people do it, that he was the one, he was the lightning rod for everything that the Jewish people needed in terms of connection to Hashem, was not a position that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted or was seeking or was even comfortable with to a great degree. But that's what we chose, and that was the task which Moshe Rabbeinu ended up having. When Hashem says to him, Shuvu lachem le'aleichem, atopay amedi midi, tell them they should go back to their families and you stay here with me, which was of course the statement to address the last portion of this week's parsha, where Miriam and Aaron say, we are also Nevi'im. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't have an exclusive. There are other prophets here. We have family life. What about Moshe Rabbeinu? So Hashem says, Moshe Rabbeinu still has an exclusive. Yes, you have something of Nevuah, but you don't have Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah. Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah is qualitatively different. Does Moshe Rabbeinu object when they make this comment? No, because Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't want the exclusive. He's the on of Moed, Mikol Adam Asher Al Pnei Adama. He's not looking to advance himself and be higher than everybody else. He would love to be even with everybody else. But Hashem says, this is not the reality. The reality is Moshe Rabbeinu is the exclusive prophet. So you understand that what the Jewish people experienced at Har Sinai, which was to be able to talk to Hashem without being disturbed by it, without having to be sent into some kind of a fit, out of it, like what happened, generally speaking, with a Navi. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Bnei Yisrael had it, you know, the pel peh, the panim b'fanim, the face-to-face encounter which HaKadosh Baruch Hu had. Now, the Bnei Yisrael were. It did take the breath out of them. It did take the breath out of them. Chazal say Hashem had to bring them back to life each time. It was shocking, right? But HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them somehow, according to most Rishonim, a taste of what Moshe Rabbeinu had. But then they gave it up. And they said, Moshe Rabbeinu, it's you. You're the one who's supposed to have it, and nobody else will. There'll be Nevi'im. Moshe Rabbeinu even uses the term later in the Torah, Kamayni, like me. But it's not literally. They'll never be like Moshe Rabbeinu. As the Torah testifies, There'll never be another prophet like Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is aspaklaria hamira, given over completely to Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu had the entire nasa v'nishma of the Jewish people, and that all that clarity, all that freedom of the mind and of the will of the body from the trappings of the chaimer of physicality, all that was Moshe Rabbeinu's. And you understand, therefore, when the Jewish people didn't see Moshe Rabbeinu coming down on time, they got kind of nervous. How are we going to do it? How could it happen? They didn't see even the possibility of being able to do it, of being able to replace Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, by themselves. That's the simplest thing. That's the simplest vision of Moshe Rabbeinu. Not LaMoshe. The Moshe Rabbeinu took it all. He took all of these crowns, and all of this fantastic connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu became completely concentrated in Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah. Questions, comments? No? Yeah.
Does anything after that, let's say, step back? From left field, the next statement is in the Torah is don't make images of gold or silver, and it's not so obvious that they now drop that statement. You become intermediary. The whole danger, the whole world open up having other intermediaries which are idols.
Excellent, and exactly right. Right at the end of Parshas Yisro, when they accomplished the pullback, HaKadosh Baruch Hu starts giving them instructions, including the prohibition against Elohei Chesed, Elohei Zav. And yes, that's a reality. Once they feel that they can't have that direct connection, so then they seek intermediaries. They would imagine that they would need intermediaries and different things that would allow them to see Hashem, you know, some kind of image that could replace it. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want that. He doesn't want that kind of a replacement. And in a sense, when you read the Pasuk Kipshuto, he doesn't even want the Mishkan-type replacements. The only thing he countenances is the Mizbeach, which is the vehicle to offer things to Hashem, but not a residence of Hashem. Only, according to many, after the Egel, after the Jewish people really didn't just step back from speaking to Hashem, but showed this tremendous distance and this need to have something to look at, did Hashem say, okay, if you need something, this is how I'll tell you to make it. This is the way I'll tell you to make it. But yes, you're absolutely right. That comes all on the heels of and as a result of what we're describing here.
How does this tie into the subject about that? What should you talk about?
The oil that Moshe Rabbeinu went, he was not alone mechutz l'machane. So originally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and ultimately as well, again, to the extent that Moshe Rabbeinu succeeds in restoring it, is in the midst of the Jewish people. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence is in the midst of the Jewish people as a whole. After the Egel, Moshe Rabbeinu takes the tent, he takes it out of the Jewish people, and it becomes Moshe Rabbeinu's tent of meeting with Hashem Yisbarach. Right? That's what that pasuk is describing. And yes, ultimately it'll be restored when Moshe Rabbeinu, after the Egel, davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Yelech Na Hashem Bekirbeinu, that Hashem should go in the midst of the Jewish people, that Hashem shouldn't take this to the extreme and say, like he did after the Egel, and say, you know, I'm going to destroy the Jewish people, and you're going to be the one, because you're the one who took all the crowns. You're the one who has that relationship. So Moshe Rabbeinu fights to get it restored to HaKadosh Baruch Hu going with the Jewish people. But till the Mishkan is built, that was when they knew, what does Chazal say, right? Rashi brings it all the time in Chumash. Then they knew that it was forgiven for them, the Maaseh of Egel, right? Because of the Mishkan. Because the Mishkan was, again, Hashem resting in the midst of the Jewish people. Instead of Hashem resting with Moshe Rabbeinu in some isolated place, some isolated spot, michutz l'machane, again it was restored to be in the midst of the camp with Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the That's the idea. That was the idea. So it describes the Gemara that brings the pasuk of Umayshe Yichach Asael v'Nataloi Mechutz La'Menachne v'Hoya Kol Mevakesh Hashem Yetzei Aloi El Mayed. That's the different paradigm. It's all around Moshe Rabbeinu, all the Hashras Hashchina, all that has to be said. It's all going around Moshe Rabbeinu. It's all going around Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, again, this is what Moshe Rabbeinu is going to, is working to change, working to redirect all the time. He wants it to be as little as possible. That should be the emphasis, and that should be the way things are seen. The manifestation of this on the face of Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, was that when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai, after the Masa Egel, after speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, people looked at him, and his physical appearance, especially his face, was overwhelming to them. They saw the Shechina on his face. It's a fascinating thing, because what does it say after Har Sinai? Why did Hashem come to reveal himself to the Jewish people? Was, Ubavur Tieh Yirosoi Al Pneichem, that the fear of Hashem should be upon your face. Now, of course, what does that mean? That a Jew has a certain humility, a certain modesti. The Gemara says, Yirosoi Al Pneichem is busha. Right, it's an imprint on the face of the person about how the person looks and how the person carries himself as a result of having had the experience of Har Sinai. But of course, Moshe Rabbeinu is also Al Pneichem, and it's magnified. It's incredible how magnified it is, and it's because of the presence of Hashem. It's not Stam, the idea that the presence of Hashem spilled onto the face of Moshe Rabbeinu from the outside, from the external. But as it's understood, is that the stronger Moshe Rabbeinu's neshama was because of the encounter with Hashem Yisborach, the more it shone through, the more it was so visible upon his face, like it was on the face of Adam HaRishon. Right? It's only as we get more material, as the Medrash says, as I've told you before, the Medrash says that as we became enmeshed in physicality, Nasa Pnei Adam Kipnei HaKayf. That's when people's faces started to look like monkey faces, right? That we didn't have the radiance of the Shechina that was upon us. Moshe Rabbeinu had it. That was all part of this. That was all part of this thing. That was all part of it. Yes, and it can exist on other levels with other people, as the pasuk says, as Ramchal says in Das Tzfunos, Chachmas Adam Toyer Panav. The wisdom of a person can make their face shine, can make them lustrous. But it's all that in a sense is the hayd, that's the glory of Moshe Rabbeinu that he gets as a result. Again, look at this week's parsha. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I want other people to have the leadership. Hashem says, okay, there will be 70 others, right? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes and shares it with them. They get the Ruach Hasher Alech of Samti Aleihem. By Yeshua, it says, "V'nasata mehayd chalav." You'll put some of your hayd on him. And what was it? He looked different. Yeshua also would look different. He wouldn't be as brilliantly shining as Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu shone like the sun, Yeshua like the moon. But it's all part of this thing. Now think back. What do Chazal tell us about Shabbos? Chazal tell us about Shabbos that einai daima, you can't compare the ma'ar panav shal adam B'Shabbos, like the Ma'ar Panav Shel Adam B'Chol. A person looks different on Shabbos than they look during the week. The radiance of a person's face is supposed to be different on Shabbos than it is during the week. On Shabbos, you don't need Panam Chadoshes by Yosheva Brachos. Normally you're supposed to have someone who wasn't there before. But we say, no. Mizmar Shili Yem HaShabbos, Panam Chadoshes Bo Lakan. Right? So everybody's new. Nobody's been at the Simcha before. These are all, everybody is, with this new burst of Panam Chadashis, because a person is different. Right? That's a little bit of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's Yismach Moshe B'Matnas Chelkai. That's Shabbos. That's the idea. It's all, how these things to some degree go together. The imprisonment to the physicality, which to some degree is relieved on Shabbos, was relieved by the Jewish people at Har Sinai, which of course the Torah was given on Shabbos, and it was permanent for Moshe Rabbeinu. For Moshe Rabbeinu was Yom Shekulei Shabbos. For Moshe Rabbeinu, he never knew of these limitations of physicality. So the crown that's there is there. And those, you know, anybody here have a Sfarad sitter? Anybody that has a Sfarad have one hidden in their talus? Right. But if anybody says Kegavna on Friday night, right, which is the passage from the Zohar that people say Nusach Sfarad before, right, it's all Inon Misatrin, right, it's all the crowns of Shabbos. It's all the crowns of Shabbos. We speak about Shabbos as being the Shabbos queen. It's all Malchus, right? And it's this liberation from, you know, it is, you know, there is such a thing of being a prisoner to yourself, being a prisoner to your physicality, and this was what was achieved. So, you know, how we picture the crowns of Nasav and Ishmael, you know, like what is it exactly? How were they? How did they fit? You know, and so on. But it's just simply the Ben Chayrin, the freedom. Freedom from the bonds of the Yetzer and of the physicality. Questions, comments? We finished the parak fundamentally. I'll share with you one last thought, because we're not going to go on to the next parak today, which is a different subject, different chazal, different direction. The chayrus, which makes for being kings. You know, there's a connection between Yitzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah. Everybody knows, right? We counted the 50 days from Yitzias Mitzrayim to Matan Torah. We were taken out of Mitzrayim in order to have Tavdun HaSolokim al Har HaZeh. And the expressions of Yitzias Mitzrayim are completed at Matan Torah. At Yitzias Mitzrayim, Hashem took us out from being slaves. And at Matan Torah, Hashem said, Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, right? Now you are my servants, right? It's the whole thing is there together. And the chayrus of Yitzias Mitzrayim is expressed more fully in the chorus of the luchos. Right? The luchos, it uses the term, the michtav elekim was chorus ala luchos. It was engraved upon the luchos. And that chorus is chayrus. Is freedom. We learn that the Ben Chayrin, the true Ben Chayrin, is the person's connection to the Torah. So what does it mean? How do we understand this Chayrus, this Chorus al Aluches? So, you know, I've shared this with some of you before, and again, just to understand it, you know, to understand its connection here, is that the difference between a writing which is written upon a paper or upon a parchment, and an engraving which is chorus, is that chorus is through and through. It's not superimposed. Chorus, something which is engraved, is part and parcel of that which it's engraved upon. Ink can separate from the parchment. The engraving can't be separated from the stone. Yes, miraculously we describe at the time of the Egel that the letters flew off of the Luchos, right? But you understand that there aren't two entities. The stone is the lettering. The lettering is the stone. They're one and the same. The two become completely connected to each other. in order to have true chayrus, what you avoid is a super imposition of anything. Right? Mitzrayim, Shibud, were the Jewish people into their slavery? They weren't into their slavery. Their slavery wasn't them. The slavery was something which was imposed upon them from the outside. Paray made them do it. Right? That's Shibud. That's Shibud. Chayrus is not when something is imposed on you from the outside, but where it's through and through. It's you. It's what you want to do. It's, you know, the inner essence is in concert completely with what the person is on the outside. And the struggles which we have of how the flesh can meet the spirit, of how a human being of flesh and blood is going to be able to encounter HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is to the extent that things are superimposed. They're superimposed. They say, what, we normal people, are going to be encountering HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It doesn't work, right? That's not really us. And, you know, sometimes you can just grin and bear it and go ahead, but sometimes it's like the contradiction between what you are acting and what you are is just too much, and the two aren't going to be able to go together. That's where the conflict comes from. And that's why in the original Matan Torah, in the original Luchos, this idea of Chorus ala Luchos was because we had given ourselves over so completely that there wasn't this contradiction between who we were and what we were saying we were going to do, who we were and who we were meeting and speaking to. It was very concerted. It was very, very much working together, very comfortable. That's the oiftu, that's the accomplishment of matan haluchais, of the giving of the luchais, of the chorus al haluchais, where it's not just something which is external, but it's part and parcel. Moshe Rabbeinu had that. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu was, you know, he was completely taken over by this. The Torah reached everything. It reached down to his tippy toes, right? His whole being was transformed. That he didn't age and he didn't wither and he didn't gray and because it was him. There was no basar that was separate from the ruach. There was no flesh that was separate from the spirit. That was separate from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the crown, you know. To be when. Part of me wants this and part of me wants that. It's very hard to describe yourself as free. Because something is always not getting its due. But when it's through and through, then that's the Ben Chayrin. That's the Ben Chayrin. That's the royalty. That's the freedom. And it's through and through. So only Moshe Rabbeinu had that in the end. We gave it up. We gave it up. We gave up the harmony which was there. We gave up the commitment, the pure spirituality which was there. Layamiru eskvaydam betavnis sharech alesev. And we traded it in for an ox that munches on grass.
Yeah. You said that we traded it in, but yet we really weren't up to it. And we didn't have that level that physically we just couldn't do it, right? So how responsible are we really for?
Again, on one level, Hashem says, you know, they're right, they're being realistic. On the other level, we didn't have the strength to jump.
So did
we do the right thing? Hashem says, Heitiv asher diberu. Is it a very, very unfortunate thing that's the right thing? It's a very sad reality. Now, does that mean that therefore we just give up the whole thing and say, okay, let's all become cows? Right? And I was, of course not. We have to realize what we passed up and what we have to be moving for, towards. You know, in the Zohar it says that when Moshe Rabbeinu came, the Shtei Luchasim were Al Shtei Yodav. So in the Zohar it says that they weren't even Luchas. He had five commandments on each hand. You know, that's like the ultimate integration of the person with the Torah. So, yeah.
Part of we became Jews at some level, from the spirit of Jews. Part of that, they're talking about the personal experience, part of that becoming a Jew is that you literally go through an equivalent to a death experience. In other words, you've got to give up what you were to receive what is new. And that I experienced it very dramatically during when I was converted to become Jewish. So I literally had to give up my Gentile self, and it was a kind of a death period. It was absolutely frightening in many ways. So therefore, that though they felt those things, that was necessary to be to like cleave the old self away to become a Jew. So, but they didn't do it. They did become Jewish, but they it wasn't like in a way confirmed in that sense. So I completely understand the principle.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Shannon Lady, not she weren't involved in the heads of, well, why aren't they on the same level?
They weren't involved in the same way in the Chet. Shevi Levi wasn't involved in the same way in the Chet, and that's why, to some degree, that becomes the, you know, the task in the life of Shevi Levi, which is that they are also not enslaved to the earth. They're not given a portion of the land that they have to work. Instead, you know, everybody's going to deliver it to them. You know, they're masros. Did they remain like Moshe Rabbeinu? Were they not part of the voice that said Kravato Shema? They were certainly part of the voice that said Kravato Shema. They didn't express themselves to the ultimate in the Egel Hazav, right? And the women similarly, you know, they are part of the collective of the Jewish people. They didn't, you know, there were levels within the Jewish people of how far away they went. But they were part of the collective of the Jewish people in terms of this.
I mean, it was really just the Arab Rab that was like totally immersed in this, right?
They were the biggest leaders of it. They were the leaders of it. But again, they're madregos yesh, all kinds of levels, and nobody from the Jewish people, other than Moshe Rabbeinu, was out of the whole net of the Egel. Nobody was out of it completely.
What about Yeshua?
Yes, he was the closest to being out of it completely. He was the closest to being out of it completely. He also was part of the Kravat Ushma. Right? Yeshua also wasn't up there on Har Sinai with Moshe. He was there for the V'yata Daber Eleinu more than anybody else. He wanted to get what Moshe Rabbeinu got from Moshe Rabbeinu more than anybody else, but he wasn't, you know, rushing up there to HaKadosh Baruch Hu either. So, Chazal see it this way, that when they said, you go and you speak and we'll stay back, that was the roots of the ego. That was the beginning of the Chet HaEgel. And again, it's just purely rationally it is. Because if Moshe Rabbeinu is the delegate to Hashem and Moshe Rabbeinu disappears, they get nervous, right? But if they hadn't asked Moshe Rabbeinu to be the delegate to Hashem, so Moshe Rabbeinu disappears, you know, quote unquote, big deal. You know, we can all speak to Hashem, right? So rationally it is that way, but on another level. And Yeshua is certainly a part of that. Everybody's a part of that. Everybody's a part of that. Moshe Rabbeinu took all the crowns. Kulan Zacha Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, good morning. I'm going to go.